Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today I have Casey Wu on the line, and he's CFO at Landing, and he's also co-founder and managing member of Operators Guild. Casey, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right, Casey. So excited to have you on the show. So for our audience that's been following Startup Garage for a long time, I mean, these are, you know, everything from very tenured entrepreneurs and professionals all the way down to, you know, somebody that's starting their first startup for the first time and getting their feet wet there. And I think one of the unique things about having you on the show is that obviously your work with Operators Guild, when you think about building a community, all these other things, like what we'll get into that, but you've done that, but then also working over at Landing as well and really helping and working with companies on scale. I mean, you're also an expert at that. So I think we got a unique vantage point with you today on the show, but we'll start this episode the way that we start them all with our Mission Matters Minute. So Casey, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Casey, what mission matters to you?
The accidental mission that now matters a lot to me that started out of a problem I was trying to solve but is now something I've realized I authentically care about is enabling, empowering, and supporting operators around the world. And that's both professionally, emotionally, career-wise, therapy-wise, friendship-wise. But yeah, that to me is my personal mission that I care about. Oh, and specifically underrepresented like females, minorities, etc., to become operators and to make it a career.
It's awesome. Love having mission-based individuals on the line to share why they do what they do, like what gets them excited to get out there into the marketplace and to make a difference. So awesome having you on. And let's just dive right in. So I have to know, Casey, like where did all this start for you? Like the fascination or this getting into the startup world? Like how did that start for you?
The medium length version is I went to West Point, the military academy, then I went to Harvard for economics. As an economics major at Harvard, you're told there's two steps to nirvana. Step one is get a banking job at an island called Manhattan and at a company called Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley. Those are the cool ones. Okay. Told a lot of army stories and was lucky enough to get a job at Morgan Stanley. The second and last step to nirvana when it comes to Wall Street path is get a hedge fund or private equity job and retire. Then it works really well. And I have a lot of friends who are amazing at it and they're doing just fine. For me, you know, I was lucky enough. I was a part of a very well-known hedge fund. I had a private office and I could see Central Park. It was amazing. And what I realized though for me is I missed my team. No one ever told me being in an office that's beautiful, looking over a view, being a hedge fund investor meant being by yourself. I almost felt like a overpaid PhD student. I didn't realize that. So number one was missing my team, because in the military and banking, you're team sports. The second thing is I realized I'd love to build things. I don't care if it's IKEA furniture, some project I have in the home or businesses. And generally speaking, when you are a consultant, banker, auditor, lawyer, investor, unless it's your own company you're building, you're mostly transacting and advising. And there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, I like to build. And the transacting kind of became a treadmill for me. So with all of that, after 10 years in air quote Wall Street, I took a big pay cut, joined a 10-person startup, and I never looked back. It was, It's everything I was wired to do.
It's amazing. And I guess I do want to take you back to that moment in time, if I will, or those series of decisions. And it's kind of like, I like to say, it's kind of like the gut check. Cause I mean, here you are, you're obviously accomplished. You're, you know, Harvard, West Point, great career. Like you said, view, office with the view, like the things that many people want. And then when we talk about, making that transition into the unknown, right? Like the startup world can be unknown. I mean, one way or the other. Like what was that like for you when you finally decided to, I say jump off the ledge. That's my words for that. Like, it's like you jump off the ledge, you look, don't look back and you kind of exit, you know, the typical corporate life will say, like, what was that like for you?
Yeah. So when I made the leap, the minute I got in, I just felt so happy. I was immersed. Mm. The highs are high. The lows are low. So in that sense,
yeah.
So psychologically, emotionally, I was so pumped. I was running full steam ahead into something that's so, I'm like a flaming extrovert, right? It's team, it's building. And so in that sense, that was air quote, natural fish in water for me. Mm-hmm. The part that really would humble people, and this is where we talk about a lot of operators that I just got my butt kicked, which is, there's a few things. Number one is when you come from Wall Street, you work with actually only two types of people generally. One is a breed called an investor, and the other is called those who support investors, like assistants and, you know, accountants, et cetera. And what I've come to learn is I believe people are not male, female, tall, short, small, dumb. They're breeds. From a corporate standpoint, there is a sales breed. There's an enterprise sales breed, inside sales breed. There's a narcissist CEO breed. There's a humble CEO breed. There is engineering breed. There's a finance breed. There's an accounting breed. So my biggest learning about going to startup is I walked out from a two breed structure called hedge funds, where everyone talked my language. And I was speaking English to an engineer. I was speaking English to a head of marketing. And we were not communicating. And it was like, what part of a process don't you understand? And they're like, what are you talking about? And so I realized you have to be Google Translate. You actually have to learn multiple languages as an operator, especially as a CFO, COO, that I never realized. And it's been an incredible joy for 10 years. I feel like I'm multilingual now. And it changes everything once you can speak someone's language. But it's not very apparent when you start that English is not the language.
Oh, yeah. No, I get it. And so I when I left finance, so that was my background, almost 14 years for those that have been watching this show for a long time or listening to the show for a long time. And then I got into media, and I've been in media now full-time 5 years. So I went from this finance, exactly what you're talking about, language, and very few people understand what I'm talking about when I say that. But then I went into media, and now I'm surrounded by, you know, very intelligent and passionate creatives. And it's like, whoa, okay, we're speaking two different languages. So I had to learn the language of the new business that I was in. They weren't doing anything wrong. It was me in this case, because I wasn't even in my own realm, to be honest. And many years later, I'm still trying to learn the language, but I digress on that one. I want to switch up the focus a bit here, Casey. I do want to spend some time getting into what you're doing at both Landing and at Operators Guild. So maybe let's start with, because you've brought up operators more than once at this point, let's start with Operators Guild. So tell us a little bit more about the company, please.
The Operators Guild is, you know, like I said, some people hike, some people bike for a hobby. I happen to help support a community. That's just kind of where I spend my, you know, weekends and free time. My day job is the CFO at Landing, and I am still a very heavy, active, in love with operating. And I feel like you got to keep playing ball, and that's my primary. But as it relates to Operators Guild, it basically, when I switched from Wall Street over to operating, the short story is I went from King of the Mountain, Finance New York, to bottom of the totem pole, which is air quote back office, finance, legal, HR, Silicon Valley. Yeah. So 10 years ago, it was just, I mean, I'm having a blanket statement here, but let's just say back then, these cross-functional G&A functions were considered not really first-class citizens. And then because of that, I felt pretty lonely and said, okay, if I'm starting a new career, I would like to have some friends. And I was solving a problem of my own. Mm-hmm. I was invited to a 9-person lunch by a guy named Jamie Seglars. And it was like the universe and planets aligned. There's 9 of us. We hit it off. We understood each other. I felt relieved that I wasn't the only one going through this. And I told Jamie, hey, I love this. I had a group like this in New York. Are you interested in formalizing and creating a little, you know, breakfast club or, you know, mom's group for operators that we meet up and just help each other? And it's the rules are no promotion, no solicitation. Give more than you get. Leave your ego at the door. What's said here stays here, and invite only. And that hasn't changed. Those 9 people are 600 today. I've had over probably 1,000 one-on-one meetings of operators over that 10 years. So I feel like I've really understood the breed. And I've had the fortune of just being a very active member, helping to grow the community, supporting the ways I can, and helping to build more services and products for the community, from jobs, Q&A support, education, the local chapters, and it's been super fun. So that's the operator skill.
Mm. And let's go a bit into Landing as well. So tell us a little bit more about that company, please.
Yes. So I'm the CFO at Landing. I think to understand Landing, you have to understand the founder, like all companies. Mm-hmm. Bill Smith is an incredible operator. You know, I've worked with many operators, met with many operators, I'm sorry, CEOs mm-hmm. for a long time. And I've been at the fortune of working with some of the best in the world. And there is a difference between Olympic level operating and college level. Think Elon Musk when you talk about Olympic level. And what I say is, mm-hmm. if you thought Elon Musk got lucky 5 times in a row, you probably don't understand that operating is a skill sport.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come across someone like that, you better hold on real tight and learn from them. Mm-hmm. They're very special. And anyhow, that's Bill. He's from Birmingham, Alabama. There's a whole hour podcast on just him that you should listen to. But he's age of 16, made too much money doing an entrepreneurial activity, couldn't go back to school, and he's never looked back since. He's also the former founder of Shift. Not former. He's the founder of Shift that sold to Target, and now it's Landing. So Landing, first and foremost, is going to be what he states is his fourth and final startup. And by that, he means an enduring long-term franchise, not a build it, flip it type company, which is very different. I mean, it's actually a very subtle but interesting point when someone found something. Some people just want to get rich quick. Others are like, the money is not what, he's well off. Right? He's done very well for himself, but an extra $100 million is not going to change his life.
Mm-hmm.
So, but building an enduring franchise is like top of the Maslow's hierarchy when it comes to Elon Musk of the world. So that's a very important orientation, long-term radical thinking. In one or two sentences, Landing is going to be the Marriott for apartment living.
Mm.
So there is no such thing as flexible living really until today. Landing is by far the category leader. And what is flexible living? Flexible living is if I want to stay somewhere 3 months and then change my mind and go 4 months and then 5 months or 6.5 months or 17 months, you can do that. Flexible living is furnished. I don't need to drag around furniture. I don't need to dispose of it. You know, buy it for $5,000, sell it for $10. The moving costs, the friction costs, it's turnkey. Just like what corporate housing has done for business people, we can do that for the person who lives. So the keywords are residential, long-term, and living, not short-term corporate housing. So that's us. We are vertically integrated, so think baby Amazon, to control the entire experience and to make sure we have the best absolute price for living, which, by the way, when you're talking about 20 to 40% cheaper than Airbnb, mm-hmm. you're talking like 10 or 15,000 after-tax U.S. dollars per year to a consumer. Right? We're not an iTunes subscription, so we are really going to make a dent in bringing in, live more, rent less. And the other thing is renting stocks. It's a fragmented market, leasing offices. No one really likes their landlord. The whole process is banks and transactions and wires. It is a nightmare. That is going to get fixed. It's already fixed with Landing.
Oh, that's amazing. And I was looking at the website, so hellolanding.com. Unlock life with your Landing membership. I'm like, come on, this is, it's interesting. And I think the concept in general, I'm like, man, this is, I love it. Like, you know, when individuals are out there really just reinventing our experience, I can't claim that I'm that guy. I like to ask the questions to those individuals, and that's my place in this mix in the startup world. But I love it. Like, I feel like with people out there pioneering different ways and different ways for us to consume, different ways ways for us to enjoy experiences, whether it's, you know, virtual, whether it's in person, like all the different ways we can think about it, the word experience or experiential. I think it's interesting and I think it's fun, and there's just a lot of possibility. So from your end, I mean, you've definitely been in many spaces, from the finance side to obviously working at startups yourself. What's interesting right now, like from your vantage point that you're seeing, that's just like, man, this is, and it could be, by the way, it could be in the startup world, or it can be just in business in general. Like it could be trend or otherwise. I'm just, what's interesting to you right now that you're seeing?
That's a pretty open question, so I'm going to be everywhere.
I wanted you to be. It's intentionally open. I want your answer to that one.
Okay, well, I'm going to throw some spaghetti at the wall. There's all sorts of interesting trends. I'll be short with them, and then you can double-click if you want. Number one is crypto is here to stay. It is not just a technology. It's a movement. It's both. It's price speculation. It's thing. It's freedom to transact. But people who think that's it's for drug lords and things like that is wrong. And you need to understand crypto, embrace it, utilize it.
Get over it.
Know the bad and good, whatever. I'm not saying you need to put your money in it, but it's going to be part of our lives. That's one thing.
We accepted our first crypto payment just so everybody knows that, I think last month. So we're on board. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And then people are like, oh, what happens if it gets regulated? I said, the minute it gets regulated means it's for real. It's
supposed to be. It has to be.
Yeah.
You think that these... the government's not going to at some point get their cut. Yeah, right. It's common sense.
Well, my point is, the fact that you worry about being regulated tells me you've admitted to me it's legitimate. It's here to stay. Governments don't regulate things that are fads. Okay. They don't care.
Yeah.
Right. The governments regulate things that are going to be a force to be reckoned with and a really impactful thing. Okay. So that's one. Number two is the rise of the operator. It used to be called HR. You don't call people HR anymore. You call them people.
Nope.
Chief People Officer. And that's a nod to back office moving to front office. Same thing with knowing the difference between a controller, a CFO, a corporate CFO, a strategic CFO. It used to be three people mattered in startups. Mm-hmm. Number one is the person who funds it, or VCs.
Yep.
Do you build it? Product engineering. Do you sell it? Sales and marketing. Those are the first class citizens. I think there's a fourth now. Those who scale it. And so, which ties into the other trend, which is software is eating the world. It's now moving to eating the operating world. What I mean by that is the physical world. Think WeWork, DoorDash, Instacart. Physical meets software meets people, which is a whole different business model. I've been at everything from pure SaaS software to heavy operating. It is night and day as an operator. When you deal with physical things, everything changes in complexity. But anyways, I think the next trend is software eating the physical world. It's already happening. Not just, Asana, a really good app on your phone for task management, which has nothing to do with the physical world. There's more trends.
I'm in.
I think
no. I'm in. And what I'm thinking about too with this is as you're talking, is I'm like, I remember you said HR. We don't call it that anymore. But even just the transition or the evolution to something like HR, they didn't even used to have I think the first step between where we're at now, which I agree with you, is they didn't even used to have a seat at the boardroom. Like it was just considered this like back office thing. And that wasn't that long ago, if we really think about it. Like, it really wasn't that long ago. And then it became all of a sudden, well, wait a minute, hiring people and people is the most important thing. And then it was like, that was now potentially, depending on the company, the size, whatever, report, like directly reporting to, the CEO, or like is right, that now right, the right hand man or woman, whatever. And now to see where this evolution is happening, I get it. And, I agree with you. Well, Casey, I know I can talk to you all day long about this. And I asked you a big question intentionally because I wanted to end on that. And I know that our listeners, many of them may want to connect and follow up and to follow your work and to learn more. I mean, what's the best way for people to connect if they want more of Casey?
Yeah, casey.wood@gmail.com. I don't know if I'm going to regret giving you my email. But I would love to hear from people. And yeah, and however I can help. But it's as simple as that. And you can find me on LinkedIn as well. I ask you guys to check out what flexible living is all about at Hello Landing. And of course, if you're an operator and looking for an amazing, authentic, no bullshit community, you should check out operators-guild.com.
Fantastic. And we'll put all the links to all of that in the show notes, of course, so that our listeners can just click on the links and head right on over. And speaking of the listeners, if this is your first time with Mission Matters, we're a platform that's all about bringing on business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives and having them share their mission, why they do what they do, and really what gets them fired up to go out into the marketplace and make a difference. If that is the type of content that sounds interesting to you, then we welcome you to hit that subscribe button, because we have many more mission-based individuals like Casey coming up on the line, and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Casey, again, really a pleasure having you come on the show today, and I look forward to diving deeper into HelloLanding.com and the landing model, because it seems super interesting to me. So thank you again.
Okay. Thank you so much.